Well, how did you first come to work on Sin City?
Robert was basically because he had three such very different stories.
Mm-hmm.
He decided that, hey, why not explore the idea of three very different composers? He just called up out of the blue and said he's got this great story. I'd like me to have a look at it. Just his brief to me was, I just want this to be different from the other two segments. So I said, well, I guess you came to the right guy. And he always is very nice. He credits me for having sort of inspired a way of working when we worked on From Dusk Till Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way I work with samplers and cutting up sounds and changing them all around. And he said he wanted a warped out Conan the Barbarian for the 21st century.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, that seems like a natural. Mm-hmm. But when we worked on From Dusk to Dawn, I said, I'm going to write you a mariachi surf opera. He said, I always wanted to hear one of those.
Okay, now you kind of mentioned the sort of the warped Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
But what did inspire the approach to the section of the movie that you scored, The Hard Goodbye?
I suppose that the look of the film, and Robert was very, very reverent the way he shot the film to really do justice to Frank Miller's drawings, and it really is an amazing piece of visual work, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I came in with the same reverence, really, in that it's clearly a noir piece. I mean, the voiceover, everything about it tells you it's noir. But my approach is always to throw everything from noir that I can remember or know of or half remember into a can and shake it all about and then throw it back out again. And I guess that's what I did. You know, I took the baritone saxophone, a beautiful Hispanic female voice, trombone with a felt mute, lots of strange metallic sounds, and jumbled them all about, and there it is. That's the way I hear the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, now Sin City is not your first comic book score.
No.
You've done The Crow and Daredevil.
Yeah.
Did you draw any inspiration from the graphic novel, or do you draw inspiration?
Yeah, very, very much so. I mean, I tell you, the movies that it seemed to me to approach mostly were his name's Lucy, I think, who did back in the 50s did Cat People and I Walk with a Zombie.
Mm-hmm.
They're black and white films, and they're just beautifully lit. I think they're some of the best lit movies in the history of cinema. This black and white approach with that very strange lighting, Robert had to do, the only way he could light the piece was to do it all against green screen and shine flashlights in people's eyes and use black light and very luminous techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was sort of, it felt like that to me. It felt like 50s in some way, but we needed to completely update it by 60 years. So I guess that's where it all came from.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, since you actually work on these films, and you're there almost like you see the films from their early approach.
Yep.
Does that ruin the movie going experience for you?
Sometimes it does, but in this case it was wonderful because I was very happy to have video to work to that was flip-flopping backwards and forwards between what was close to a final rendition and then just some actors standing against the green screen, because that way I could see what the process was. It was really interesting in this case. You know, you sort of, you've seen so many of those making of things with the wires and, all that. That's not very interesting anymore to me, but this one was. This was such a new idea. Also, there was a moment where one of John Debney's collaborators, who I've also collaborated with, called me and said, we're doing this orchestral session. Do you want to come and piggyback on it? And I said, you know what? I actually don't, because Robert doesn't want any crossover, really, between the segments. I'd rather not be orchestral, because I think my segment's a bit different from the other two. And also, I really do want to go to a premiere where I haven't seen or heard two-thirds of the movie.
Mm.
It was actually really, really fun to go to the premiere rather than sit there being anxious and second-guessing everything I'd done.
Right. Well, it was actually answers my next question as well. You did work. There were two other composers on this. It was Robert Rodriguez
and
John Debney.
Yeah.
So you did work separately. You didn't work together.
Completely separately. Yeah. Yeah. I just felt it was, that was the brief, and that's what I wanted to stay pure with the whole thing. And you know, I also had a sense that I was probably going to approach things in just a little bit of a different way than the other two, and see how it worked out. I think it worked out okay, actually.
Okay.
People seem to really like it, though. They can tell there's a difference.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that just happenstance, or did it actually sort of, did Robert say that it has to sort of sound like this?
No, he wanted me to just be completely free. The only thing that gives the the most important thing that gives the coherency to the piece is that Robert wrote the main theme called the Sin City theme, which I think I used 3 or 4 times, and I know John used a similar number of times. So we're using it in very different ways, and you know, writing little B sections to it and so on. But you can tell that, you know, there's continuity because of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, now your cue titles are fairly straightforward on Sin City, but I know that you have some rather unusual ones, like on Red Planet, for example. There's the Fifth Heaven or Canto,
right.
Triple X, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
How do you come up with cue titles?
The ones on Sin City are straightforward because I think that I was still mixing it when my music editor brother, Ashley Ravel, was trying to cut together titles to send over to Robert to get the album out the next day,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. It was one of those procedures, so I had no input onto titles whatsoever. The other titles, the ones on Red Planet, I think, were inspired by Dante. Then I was using the words from the Inferno, and that's why.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, if we have time, we try and get a little creative. It does backfire sometimes because I got fairly creative in a nice way, I think, on the Two Crow records, but I can never remember when I go back to my original tapes, which cues have anything to do with those titles. So I can never find them again.
Okay. Well, how would a score you write today differ from one you wrote, say, 10 years ago?
That's a very good question. Well, I hope I've gotten better at it overall. I know I have a lot. Everybody, I think, has benefited from this. There are a lot more people out there who are just providing CD-ROMs with sound sources and loops and all that for us, which we can then put into programs and alter somewhat to customize them. But there's a big sort of service industry of sound creation sitting underneath composers now, whereas in the past, if you wanted to create a drum loop, you literally had to sit down and program it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes things a lot quicker. It does lead a little bit. I think you hear it in television. It leads to some similarity in the way people write. And I also think, I mean, it's up to me, because I was one of the pioneers of certainly of world music in cinema, mm-hmm. and also probably techno and you know, heavy rhythms, which I think a lot of younger composers have adopted that style.
Definitely.
Simply because The Crow was on every film trailer for about 8 years. And so it's up to me to stay ahead of the game, you know?
Right. Okay, well, I know that I've read actually that you're working on a screenplay.
Yes.
So what's the current status of that?
It was with Working Title, and unfortunately their slate is completely full, so we're just looking for another home for it right now.
Hmm.
It's called The Tear Garden, and it's the story, it's a comedy musical, the story of me starting the band in the mental asylum, which I've changed quite a lot of, but that's the basis of it. So it's pretty funny stuff, and I think it's going to get made, because everybody I mention it to tell the basic story, they think that's a movie.
Yeah.
But you know what the movie industry's like.
Right, exactly. So now, what inspired this sort of wanting to write a screenplay?
So many people, when I just told them, you know, my basic life story, said, you know, there's a movie there. So that was exciting. But also, you know, I'm also in the early stages of producing a big show in Las Vegas. And I'm always looking for new opportunities. And sometimes when you do get a little bit typecast in your day job, it's up to you to go out and create those new opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now, what does the future hold for you after now that Sin City has been, I think it's been a smashing success.
Couple of weeks, yeah. Well, Robert told me that there's going to be 2 more Sin Cities.
Oh.
Starting later in the year, I think he's going to shoot 2 of them at the same time. That's the plan. But the three of us, the triumvirate, are working on the new Robert's new movie due out on, I think, June the 6th, he says. It's called Shark Boy and Lava Girl. It's a kid's movie in 3D. Okay. I get to work on the Mr. Electric character, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also doing two or three other projects off and on. One is called the Darwin Awards with Joseph Fiennes and Winona Ryder.
Mm-hmm.
One called Harsh Times, which is Christian Bale, and it's directed, a first time directing by David Ayers, who wrote Training Day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm working with my friend Danny Cannon on a film called Goal, G-O-A-L.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of video games, and so I'm a busy person.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for your time today.
All right. Then.
Again, like I said, thank you.
Thank you.